KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
It's time for the Fish Report here on KSDP. We have harvest numbers for the Alaska Peninsula, as well as some more escapement updates for the AK pen as well. The harvest summaries for Kodiak right now are confidential, but yesterday there was a report of 31,000 sockeye delivered across the Alaska Peninsula, 6,000 pinks and 6,000 chum as well added to that total. For the Shumagin Islands, there's now a total of 973 fish delivered across the Shumagin Islands as of the 11th of June, 2025. First deliveries for the South Unimak reported, 31,000 sockeyes delivered in the South Unimak area, 6,300 pink salmon, and 6,200 chum salmon reported for the Unimak area. Looking at the AK Peninsula Weir report, Chignik River had 2,600 fish up the weir yesterday. They're now at 20,500 to date. Again, that's the best since 2017. Nelson River had 1,170 fish up the weir yesterday. They're at 1,470, and that is one of their best escapements. In fact, the best escapement since 2016. 380 fish up the Bear River, putting them on the lower middle end. The Illinik has 197 up yesterday for a total of 2,500, also putting them on the middle lower end. Orzinski Weir was installed yesterday, but there are no fish reported yet, and the Iliuk River had 3 fish for a total of 4 to date. That will do it for the fish report here on KSDP.
It's time now for your community window here on KSDP, starting with job openings. The QT Tribe of Sandpoint is looking for a grant writer, an executive director, and an administrative assistant. The Palouf Harbor Tribe of Sandpoint is hiring a tribal environmental coordinator. The City of Sandpoint is hiring a part-time pull-tab sales assistant and a mechanic. APIA is hiring an ICWA caseworker for Sandpoint and a lead Head Start teacher for King Cove. EATS is hiring a behavioral health trainee and a community health representative. Both of those positions can be in Sandpoint or King Cove. They're also hiring a clinical information clerk for King Cove, a community health aide for False Pass and Nelson Lagoon, and a clinical information clerk slash janitor for Cold Bay. The King Cove Department of Public and Safety is looking to hire a certified police officer. Interested applicants can contact the King Cove PD at 907-497-2210. And today is June 12, 2025. Happy birthday to Dale Peterson. And that's all for the community window. If you have anything you'd like for us to put on the air or web, you can contact us through email at cw@apradio.org. You can call us at 907-383-5737, or you can still fax us at 907-383-5271. Also, look for updates, meeting archives, and more at apradio.org. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day. It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset. Starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitkanap to Castle Cape, small craft advisory tonight. Today, southwest winds 20 knots, seas 4 feet. Tonight, southwest winds 25 knots, seas 5 feet. And Friday, southwest winds 20 knots, seas 5 feet. Castle Cape to Cape Tolstoy, small craft advisory Friday. Today, south winds 20 knots, seas 3 feet. Tonight, south winds 20 knots, seas 3 feet. And Friday, southeast winds 20 knots, increasing to 30 in the afternoon, seas 4 feet. Cape Tolstoy to Cape Sarashef, gale warning Friday. Today, south winds 20 knots, seas 6 feet. Tonight, south winds 25 knots, seas 6 feet. And Friday, southeast winds 40 knots, seas 10 feet, increasing to 15 in the afternoon with rain. Port Hyden and Nelson Lagoon, small craft advisory tonight and Friday. Today, southeast winds 20 knots, seas 2 feet. Tonight, south winds 25 knots, seas 3 feet. And Friday, southeast winds 30 knots, seas 3 feet. Nelson Lagoon to Cape Sarashef, gale warning Friday. Today, south winds 30 knots, seas 4 feet. Tonight, south winds 30 knots, seas 4 feet. And Friday, southeast winds 40 knots, seas 6 feet with rain. Your detailed forecast for the Alaska Peninsula. Today, a chance of rain, mainly before 4 p.m. Cloudy with highs near 48. South winds around 15 miles per hour. Tonight, a chance of rain, mainly after 10 p.m. Cloudy with lows near 44. South winds around 15 miles per hour with gusts as high as 20. And Friday, a chance of rain. Cloudy with highs near 49. Southeast winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. Your tide predictions for the Popoff Island. There is a high tide at 4:50 a.m. at 8 feet 1 inch. A low at 12:12, a minus tide of 1 foot 8 inches. A high at 7:06 p.m. at 5 feet 6 inches. And a low at 11:42 at 3 feet 3 inches. Your sun rose at 6 o'clock this morning, and your sun will set at 11:23, giving us 17 hours and 23 minutes of daylight hours. And that was your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset here on KSDP and KAEB. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Coming up on KUCB News, responders have reached the scene of a burning cargo ship near Adak, and part of a conversation with an Unalaska poet you've probably heard before on KUCB. Stay tuned.
ALUU is proud to sponsor the stories and voices that connect our community. ALUU is committed to building a stronger future for our region. To learn more about ALUU's commitment for a stronger future, visit alucorp.com.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. It's Thursday, June 12th, 2025. Did you know that Sitka spruce trees can live to be over 600 years old? Now you do. This is KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk, with some local news from Unalaska. Salvage crews have arrived at the 600-foot burning cargo ship floating near the remote Aleutian island of Adak. The Morning Midas is carrying thousands of vehicles, some of which are electric or hybrid. They contain large, highly flammable batteries that release toxic gases when burning. As of June 9th, the ship is still burning, but there are no reports of pollution in the water. In a press release, the Coast Guard's 17th District Commander, Rear Admiral Megan Dean, says the safety of the public, responders, and vessel crews in the area is still the top priority. The ship's manager, Zodiac Maritime, chose Resolve Marine to lead salvage efforts. Zodiac says responders have developed an environmental pollution control plan, and spill response assets are on standby. The tugboat Gretchen Dunlap arrived on the scene Monday. Two more tugs with firefighting and long-distance towing capabilities are on the way. The Coast Guard is analyzing the ship's drift and keeping an eye on weather conditions as part of their response efforts. As of Monday, the ship was reported to be drifting northeast at about 2 miles per hour. The Morning Midas was about 220 miles south of Adak early this week. Adak is the westernmost municipality in the United States and a former naval base with only a few dozen permanent residents today. A longtime Unalaskan has a new collection of poems inspired by his life on the island. Carlos Domenico Tayag, who's worn many hats over the years, can now add local author to the list. In an upcoming episode of Island Interviews, I sat down with Tayag to hear more about the collection, titled An Island. Here's a clip from our conversation. What is the story that you're telling with this book?
It's a little bit autobiographical, but it's also a little bit like whimsical and kind of out there. You know, poetry always means two things, right? If you're doing it right, it should force people to think about multiple perspectives. I wouldn't say it's only about me, but I think it's about my experiences and interactions in the world and in society and with people and memories of people whom I've met or stories that people have told me and connecting to those stories in a personal way. It really is inspired by this island, by living here in Unalaska and writing poetry here and kind of meeting people and being in nature and listening to the sounds and like being in the wind and, you know, dealing with all of those things, right? The wind is kind of a metaphor for adversity in some ways, right? But it's also a metaphor for change and growth.
And you're using a lot of imagery from the tundra. I've noticed that the colors of the tundra are deeply symbolic in multiple entries here. And I think this is a very imagery-heavy collection. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I had a friend describe it as lyrical, which was interesting to me because I do think that colors resonate a lot with me and landscape resonates a lot with me. I think a lot of the art that I want to create is inspired by music as well, but I'm not at all a musical person.
I don't know. There's a cadence to the way you write here. There, where everything, it's all in the pauses. It's got a certain like rhythm to it, and it's distinctly modern. Truly, it reads like it should be set to music.
Yeah.
So I think if you took this collection and you said to a friend who plays the guitar, come on down, let's put this to a couple of chords.
Sure.
I think you'd have something really special.
Well, I'd love that. I'd love if someone wanted to, you know, play the background for it or play some music for it. But that's not my skill. That's not my talent. But it is, when I was building the collection, I wanted it to be like an album. Mm. Like if you put a record on the record player or you listen to your favorite album from beginning to end, I wanted each poem to kind of be like a track in the record that told this complete story of the entire record, right? So that's kind of the way that I looked at it. That's kind of the way that I approached putting this collection of poetry together.
That was part of a conversation I had with Unalaska chef, radio DJ, and poet Carlos Domenico Tayac. He'll be reading selections from his new poetry collection and signing copies Saturday night at the Unalaska Public Library from 6 to 8 o'clock. Tune in tomorrow at noon and Saturday at 4 to hear the full interview. That interview and a transcript will be posted shortly to our website at kucb.org. A few decades ago, if you wanted to get a tattoo in Anchorage, you probably visited a male-owned shop. But that's changing. Now, female tattoo artists are easy to find in the state's largest city. As Alaska Public Media's Ava White reports, customers say female tattooers tend to create welcoming environments that make them feel at home.
Laura Craver is adding blue, green, and yellow ink to a tattoo that holds a lot of meaning for Alex Johnson. There are several sections, each representing memories from his 20-year relationship with his husband.
This is Yosemite in California. We were park rangers there. This is Wisconsin, where we first met.
This isn't Johnson's first tattoo, but he says it is the first that has felt like an inviting experience. The piece that covers his entire upper arm has been a years-long work in progress. He's built a friendship with Craver and says their connection keeps him coming back.
It's a very vulnerable act to get a tattoo, and so to do it with someone who makes you feel comfortable, makes you feel safe, and makes you feel beautiful. Like, that's a really incredible gift.
Tattoo artists are licensed by the Alaska Board of Barbers and Hairdressers. The board doesn't keep statistics on gender, but anecdotally, tattoo artists in Anchorage say the number of female-owned and operated studios in the city is on the rise. Craver has been working in the industry for over a decade and opened Brightside in 2022. She says she decided to start her own shop because she wanted a space that felt different than the average studio, one that felt safe for all identities.
All we want to do is just make people happy, and everybody who comes in the door is excited to be here.
The baby pink walls are covered in sheets of tattoo designs, traditional Alaska Native artwork, and framed pinned insects. Four artists share the space in the South Anchorage studio, and Craver says they're known for bringing their identity to their tattooing. Brightside prioritizes hiring women, BIPOC, and queer artists, Craver says, because they can face additional hurdles in the male-dominated industry. She says the studio attracts clients that want to see themselves represented in their artist and the art they create.
I think that there are a lot of our clients who very specifically only feel comfortable being tattooed by a woman or by a queer person or by a person of color, and so they specifically gravitate towards this space because they know that that is what they're going to have access to.
An overwhelming majority of parlors in Anchorage were owned by men when Craver started tattooing 15 years ago, but things have changed. Deborah Yarian agrees. She grew up an aspiring artist in New York City, drawing with dry mediums, charcoal, pencils, and pastels. She has owned Eagle River Tattoo since 2008. She says woman tattooing, and wearing the art itself, was seen as immoral when she started almost half a century ago. But that stigma has faded, and she says that means more people want tattoos.
Society's perception has changed, but it has almost gone the totally different way. I mean, now everybody is tattooed.
The number of Americans with tattoos has more than doubled over the last 25 years, according to data from National Geographic and the Pew Research Center. And it's not just machine tattoos seeing a shift. According to Holly Nordlum, an Inuit tattoo artist originally from Kotzebue, there is a growing number of female traditional tattooers in Alaska. Instead of a buzzing machine, Inuit tattooing uses hand-stitching and hand-poking techniques. Nordlum started traditional tattooing about a decade ago, when she says she struggled to find a female artist.
I really couldn't find anything that suited what was most traditional, which is like women for women. It really wasn't happening in Alaska at the time.
Now, she says there are 8 Inuit tattooers, mostly women, spread across the state in Anchorage, Cordova, and Uktiagvik. At Eagle River Tattoo, Yarian says she's worked to create a safe space for women tattooers and clients. And she says that mindset has taken over the industry in Anchorage.
We're fortunate that a lot of the studios here are pretty inclusive and safe places for all people.
She encourages tattoo artists to build a relationship with their clients to make sure they feel comfortable and safe. In Anchorage, I'm Ava White.
Let's take a look at what's happening in Unalaska this week. First up, we won't be airing a new episode of our weekly program, Bering Sea Barometer, tomorrow. Host Captain Pete Nathan is busy in the shipyard this week, preparing for summer tendering. But he'll be back next week with a report on local and regional fisheries. You can find past episodes up on our website and through Spotify. Later today, researchers from NOAA's RV Atlantis will present a virtual tour of deep-sea biology and geology in the Aleutian Islands. That's this evening from 6 to 7 in the Unalaska Public Library. Researchers will discuss ocean floor exploration, underwater volcanoes, and connections to fisheries and medicine. USAFE is hosting Unalaska's Pride Celebration tomorrow, focusing on love, friendship, and local LGBTQ+ and Two-Spirit families and friends. The event features family activities and food from 5 to 7 at the Burma Road Chapel. Unalaska's Aquatic Center will host 3 community swim meets this summer, with the first meet tomorrow evening from 5 to 8:30. The events welcome swimmers ages 6 and up, from experienced competitors chasing record times to newcomers just trying out competitive swimming. On Saturday, the MV Tustamina will arrive at 9:15 in the morning, and it'll depart later in the day at 5:15. The ferry runs 6 scheduled monthly sailings to Dutch Harbor, with September having 2 trips. Also on Saturday, there will be an open mic and poetry slam from 6 to 8 in the evening at the Unalaska Public Library. The event features poetry readings and acoustic music sets. Participants under 13 must be accompanied by an adult. For info on everything else happening in town, check out your community calendar at kucb.org. That's the news from Unalaska. This is KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk. For more local coverage and community events, check out our website at kucb.org. Stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts. Enjoy the weekend.
From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
Commercial fishermen are increasingly struggling to find and pay for insurance that protects their boats and their crews. The state legislature passed a bill this session that aims to address the issue by providing another coverage option. Whether Governor Mike Dunleavy signs the legislation remains to be seen, as does its potential to help fishermen across the state. The Alaska Desk's Avery Elfeld has more.
It's a warm, sunny day in an otherwise dreary southeast spring. Cynthia Adams is catching up with fellow fishermen in the Haines Harbor several weeks before the summer salmon season.
Yeah, come to work on my boat.
Her boat is a cream-colored stern picker built in the mid-80s. It's called the Lady Hawk.
Actually, we can come in here, so. Sorry, it smells a little bit like a fishing boat, but.
The boat has earned the smell. Adams has fished for salmon in the Upperland Canal for 25 years. Over that period, she says, all of her operating costs have soared, as fish prices have stagnated. Amid the squeeze, she says, she's constantly weighing whether one of those expenses, insurance, is worth the price. This season, Adams says she'll pay about $500 per month for crew insurance, more than double what it was several years ago. On top of that, she paid more than $4,000 to insure her boat for the summer.
I haven't had to use it ever, and it just keeps going up and up and up, that cost. So you just have to stop and think, okay, is this in my budget? You know, is this smart?
Adams isn't alone. Insurance for commercial fishermen has never been cheap, but industry observers say the cost has exponentially increased over the last several years, a reality that's pushed state lawmakers to look at potential solutions. Some fishermen, like Adams, still purchase coverage each year, but it's a major financial strain. Others forgo it entirely, leaving them with no financial protection in the case of disaster. That's a risky situation, says Susan Erickson, owner of PW Insurance, Inc., an insurance agency based in Petersburg.
If it's your boat and you're a one-man operation and your boat sinks, that's your choice. But if you've got a deckhand that is injured on your vessel, you are responsible.
Soaring premiums aren't limited to commercial fishing vessels. Homeowners across the country and world are facing the same issue, as inflation and intensifying natural disasters spur billions of dollars in insured losses every year. But a major challenge in commercial fishing specifically is that there's a shrinking set of companies willing to offer policies. That means each insurer is taking on more risk and can be pickier about who they cover and at what cost. Maddie Lightsey is the owner of Alaska Boats and Permits, a marine brokerage firm based in Homer.
It has actually tanked purchases before because people have been unable to get insurance and their lender won't fund. And that's just a full stop. And they thought they had a boat to fish for the season and they don't.
The issue has grown so urgent that lawmakers are hoping to do something about it. Both chambers of the state legislature recently passed a bill that seeks to provide fishermen another option. Governor Mike Dunleavy has yet to sign the legislation. But if it becomes law, the bill would clear the way for Alaskans to form so-called insurance pools, or co-ops. Those allow each fisherman to contribute a smaller sum of money to a larger pot that the co-op uses to pay claims. It's not a new concept. Similar entities have operated out of Washington State for decades, and many fishermen in Alaska, including in Haines and Southeast, have joined in, says Lightsey.
Because the savings are so significant, like it really truly is sometimes, you know, half the cost or maybe 60% of the cost or something compared to private insurance.
But the co-ops aren't a silver bullet. They're really picky about who joins. And by definition, every member is on the hook for accidents they may have had no role in. Still, some regulators and lawmakers say there's good reason to clear the way for Alaska-based pools. Among them is State Senator Jesse Kiel, who represents Southeast communities, including Haines. He sits on a seafood industry-focused legislative task force working to boost the struggling sector.
Having more control and more options close to home, that can only benefit Alaska fishing families.
It's increasingly important, he says, amid rising costs and depressed fish prices.
As the fleet grays, it really needs to be possible for young folks to start up or maintain a new commercial fishing business here in Southeast Alaska or anywhere on our state's coast.
Back on the Lady Hawk, Adams says she looked into joining a co-op at one point. But at the time, it didn't seem like the pool would reduce her costs. So she's continued renewing her policy with a private carrier and paying more year after year. At least for now, she says, the math isn't working out in her favor. Reporting from the Small Boat Harbor in Haines, I'm Avery Elfeld.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Fisherman-owned company Silver Bay Seafoods announced in March that it was buying international processing giant OBI Seafoods. It's now a partnership between Silver Bay, which bought out the interest that was owned by Cook Aquaculture, and Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation, a community-owned group which stayed invested. Silver Bay President and CEO Cora Campbell returned to her Southeast Alaska hometown of Petersburg recently to meet with the fleet. She sat down with KFSK's Olivia Rose to chat about the transition and the future of the OBI plants, which Campbell says will undergo a name change.
We're not planning to use that name going forward, so we will be operating it as Silver Bay Seafoods.
Okay, so all OBI plants will now be Silver Bay plants?
Yes.
Okay. So Silver Bay now owns half of OBI?
That's right. But okay. Silver Bay is the operator for all the facilities. And so essentially what you will see is you'll see the local facility operating as part of the Silver Bay group of plants that includes our other plants in Ketchikan, Sitka, and Craig here in Southeast Alaska. So all four plants will operate as a group. We'll be able to move fish around as is going to make the most sense to get it in the highest value product form, preserve quality, and make sure fishermen get the best service.
You mentioned Silver Bay is going to manage all OBI facilities and operations. Is there any sort of restructuring to that?
I don't think you'll see much change in terms of local employment and what some of your local folks are doing. I think a lot of the changes will happen more at the corporate level, not at the local level, because we had a lot of things here that were working for the community, working for the fishermen. We don't want to change any of that working winning formula. The goal is to make it seamless and supportive so that they can concentrate on running their fishing businesses.
Okay. What's sort of the timeline for this transition?
Well, it's fully under Silver Bay management now, so that has occurred. But really, you can expect to see the transition having taken place in the preseason, which was our goal, and to be fully up and running on all cylinders by the time we start to see, you know, big volume deliveries from the summer fisheries. You know, we do intend to buy gillnet fish, seine fish, crab, longline fish. We do intend to operate a lengthy season. We want to, you know, really make sure that we're supporting the fishermen who operate in a multi-species way.
Will we process all the same product, like all the same way?
That will change a little bit. So we right now even are installing some new equipment at the plant to produce some higher value product forms. But you will still see a lot of the same things happen as well, and many of the same core products.
All right. I have to ask what this upcoming season might look like. Is there anything you can tell me?
Well, I mean, we're pretty excited for the upcoming season in Southeast because there's a couple of factors that I think are really positive. People should feel good that we're seeing strong halibut markets, we're seeing strong crab markets, we're seeing some recovery in the salmon markets after a couple of really difficult years. And our industry is very cyclical, but I think that message that we believe we're turning a corner here and see a lot of hope for the future is one that I hope folks can hear and take heart in.
Mm. I guess in a nutshell, what would you want the fleet to know?
I want people to know that we're a fisherman-owned company that understands the need for fishermen to have the services and the support and the markets that they need. And we're committed to this community. And that's really what I'm hoping that people will take away from this transition.
That was Silver Bay Seafoods President and CEO Cora Campbell talking to KFSK's Olivia Rose about the company's processing plants that were formerly operated by OBI Seafoods.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Alaska's fishing industry and environmental groups don't always agree, but as reported by KUCB's Theo Greenlee, they recently were on the same side, both warning that recent cuts to federal fisheries science could jeopardize Alaska's oceans. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which helps set fishing rules in federal waters, opened its meeting on Thursday, June 5th, in Oregon. According to officials there from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, the Alaska Science Center has lost more than 50 staff since February. Bob Foy directs NOAA's science operations in Alaska. He told the council that his agency is just trying to stay afloat.
You can't lose 51 people and not have that impact our ability to provide our products in a meaningful and a timely way.
The cuts are the work of the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, a Trump initiative whose stated goal is eliminating waste in government programs. The effort has been marked by confusion and controversy since its inception in January. Groups on both sides of the fishing debate say the damage done by DOGE is real and growing. Ben Intignap is a senior scientist with the conservation group Oceana. He says the losses are weakening NOAA's ability to manage fish stocks and protect sensitive ecosystems.
And we really need a fully funded NOAA fisheries program so that we can all come together and make sure that we have sustainable fisheries.
The Federal Fisheries Observer Program is also getting attention. Observers are trained scientists who ride on commercial fishing boats, collecting data on fish stocks, bycatch, and compliance. Despite a sometimes adversarial relationship with observers, many fishermen have spoken out in support of the Observer Program since it became threatened earlier this year. Chris Woodley heads the trade group Groundfish Forum, which represents Bering Sea trawlers. He called the program, quote, the backbone of the North Pacific fisheries, close quote, and warned that cuts could hurt Alaska's commercial sector.
Without observers, there are no fish and there is no revenue.
Woodley does support other Trump recommendations like opening fishing in protected areas such as sea lion habitat. The council is expected to continue the discussion at its next meeting in October.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
Down.
KSDP is generously supported by Precision Airways in Sandpoint, Alaska, offering chartered air services throughout the Aleutians Eastboro and beyond. For more information on charters and prices, Theo is available at 907-989-4080. Precision Airways is a proud sponsor of KSDP.
Na 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 na